everybody, and welcome back to the Be Better podcast. We are here today back in Minneapolis at the global worldwide headquarters of Final Case Sporting Services. And I have a very interesting individual that we will be talking to here on the phone today. We try and bring you people that we think are fun, interesting, and really contribute to kind of that ideal of being better. And I think we've got a great one today. So with us today on the phone is Richie Crowley. Richie, welcome to the Be Better podcast.
Thank you. I'm honored. I've been following you guys and really admiring both what you guys do professionally for athletes and then also just like through this podcast. And you guys really, really find amazing people. So I am excited to be one of those and be in this conversation with you and just can't wait to get into it.
Oh, that's great. So where are you calling us from today?
So I'm right now in Los Angeles, California. So I moved out here in December, but I've been living in Boston the previous two and a half years.
Okay. So Richie, you've got a very, you know, so I will say when I first started researching you, it seemed like every like little rock that I turned up came up something cooler and cooler and cooler. And let's, you know, so let's start out with, and I started off with looking at you and your website, the wildbutwell.com. And it kind of started me down this path of, wait, what? He's a hockey player. And and if you know me, if you've heard me, if you met me, you know that I'm a huge hockey nerd. I mean, actually,
coming from the state of hockey,
absolutely. Actually, I told my kids this morning at breakfast that I got a hat trick last night in our game, and they were like, very, very not amused and didn't really care that Dad got a hat trick last night. I was like, but I was plus four, and they're like, yeah. Can we have some peanut butter toast? And I'm like, oh, come on. And awesome. So the fact that you started out as a two-time captain for the US U18 team and then went on to play at Brown, you then went on to play professionally in Europe for a couple of years and really had, I mean, in looking at you, I was looking at your stats, you had a pretty respectable a career there, and starting in, like, you know, so 2007 to 2008 with that first time first time at the UAT team, and then kind of wrapping up in 2015, 2016.
Yeah, no, it was, I think respectable is a really great word for it. I was always someone who really prided myself on the team, and looking back on it, I sometimes wish I took more risks to be more of an offensive threat throughout my career, but I thought there was so much glory in blocking the shot that maybe the fans don't know, but the whole team is like, that was such a massive block or a great penalty kill. Really defensive minded type player. But I also took a lot of pride in what communities and what the coaching staff and organizations thought of me as an individual, a human, and a leader. So to be, for 2 years to be essentially Captain America, like captain of the national team, is something where friends of mine, teammates, are now on our Olympic team, are winning Stanley Cups. It was such an incredible experience to be bestowed with that letter on the jersey. And then same thing at Brown, and then playing internationally, it was this ambassador of sport in a way from a foreign country. It was really cool to go in there and be one of, you know, four or five North Americans on a team, not speaking the same language, but be invited into those communities. And now, even 3 or 4 years later, still getting a text message, a WhatsApp, or a Facebook message from a fan being like, hey, are you ever going to come back here? We'd love to just like have coffee again or hang out. And like, that means that's the stuff that's not on the score sheet. You know, not the goal, the assist, and that, marrying that or looking at that parallel to just any stats that I did put up really makes me reflect on it and be proud, you know, like really proud of that chunk of time in my life, those 10 years where it was playing at the highest level that I could.
Well, and I totally agree, because, you know, just looking at, you know, if you look at like number one, you start off with games played, you know, played a fair amount of the season, and I think that's awesome. And then if you start looking down at like goals and assists and points, I think, you know, those are relative to the outside fan. And like you pointed out, the true team player, the guy that sets up the play, that's the play behind the play, makes the big block, allows the breakout to come out, or kicks it out of the zone and allows for the breakaway. Those are the, the things that I don't think stats don't show. Although you did have a pretty fair number of penalty minutes in 08-09. So, but it looks like you did try and dial that back a little bit. That didn't seem to be a trend.
That was because, honestly, there were three straight weekends where events went down in a game where I would like jump into a scrum or do something to what I would call defend a teammate or protect a teammate, and it resulted in game misconduct. So those penalty minutes were like 3 weeks, like probably the month of March that year was maybe 70 or 80 of them.
That's like 78 penalty minutes in 22 games. That's like, you're like getting Dino Cicerelli stats right there. You know, you're way up there, but that's awesome. So, you know, so then you go on from hockey, it seems like that's kind of where the genesis of kind of your wellness journey came from. Cause it, in looking at also at your bio, that's kind of where you started to find, just the healthy eating and kind of not only just like a healthy lifestyle from a physicality standpoint, but also from a mental and emotional standpoint. You were looking at, you know, just the way that movement works, that stress works, and sleeping habits, all that kind of ties in with financial stability and really how you kind of became almost like maybe Richie 2.0 coming out of the backside of that. Is that
totally
kind of, what brought 100%. That on?
So injuries, I would say injuries. I think having some herniated discs, having separated shoulders, I was limiting myself what I could do in a weight room, you know, power cleans, front squats, pull-ups, bench press, all this stuff was out of the question. And then I just started kind of asking myself, I was like, do I need that? I was like, do I need the front squat? Is there another way for me to train my legs? And I started saying like, cool, I want to have this durability, longevity, endurance style. So I started getting into more body weight, then yoga, cycling, more long distance running, things that you can really do without much resources. You know, you can just go outside and move naturally, enjoy it, treat it like an active meditation of sorts as well. So it starts there. And I started listening to the podcast and kind of hearing what more athletes in call it like the tri world were training, what they were doing, how they were eating, what they were testing, using myself as that guinea pig. And the podcast led to the books led to this expanded definition of wellness, that it is not just diet and fitness. Those are two buckets of it, but there's also, hey, recovery and sleep, that relationship, the relationship that anxiety has or stress, the relationship that just how you speak to yourself, how you live in community, all of that is part of wellness.
Absolutely.
And it makes so much sense looking back on it. You know, confidence and self-esteem is a part of wellness under the bucket of maybe mental wellness. Yeah. So as a player, there are times maybe I'm 19 years old and I'm not mature enough to understand that. So I go and I make a risky play that doesn't work, and I come back to the bench and I feel guilty or I feel shame that I'm like, you know what, I tried something, it didn't work. It actually put my team at risk of being scored upon. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the courage to then say, hey, try that again, or have the confidence to try it again. So that limited myself offensively. But some of the best players offensively are like, you know what, screw it. If I do this 10 times and it works once or twice, 10 or 20%, that could be two goals. We win that game. And having that realization now has been so interesting. And again, it's one part of that bucket of wellness.
Yeah.
One thing too, I think that you brought up, and I'm really glad you noticed, was this financial wellness and financial stability. Cause I've continuously tried to, this is a continuous conversation I have. It's like, how can we get, you know, everyone to invest in their wellness and recognize that it is super accessible, you know, going for a run or grabbing a bike from a local flea market, eating some local foods from your grocery stores and going to sleep as opposed to like the $50 a month YouTube subscription. It's like, there's actually ways that you can like incentivize yourself to invest in your wellness. But part of that has been just the guinea pig process on myself where I'm like, okay, here's what my goal is. I want to be well, then let me build my life around that rather than try to build my life and fit in. Like, what can I do with wellness? How much time do I have? So it's been this, it's evolving. It's always evolving. But now being 28 years old, I have such a better understanding and maturity towards it than when I was 18, 19, 20, 21.
Oh, and that's a hard, that's a hard kind of bridge to make it over too. And mm-hmm. you know, and when you're talking about some of these things, these are echoing some of the main concerns, and I would say goals that many health insurance companies are trying to actually mm-hmm. they're trying to grab or trying, you know, they're trying to bottle up. I know in my time working with United Health Group or working for United Health Group, those were some things that we were really trying to encapsulate. And I think you put it in a good perspective, because I think people think that, okay, I could be fit and I could be healthy, but I got to do this and I got to do this and mm-hmm. these things ruin it. And every yes. day it's just like they kind of corrupt their life just a little bit. One thing, like they always seem to sell themselves out first before they do anybody else. And I've often said to people that have struggled to try and get back on this path, especially like executives and older working people, that you need to take your life back 30 minutes at a time and start scheduling time for yourself and honor it as if it was a meeting with, you know, a high level CEO or a big client. Don't skip it. Don't just crush it because something else comes up. And it seems like that is a very easy downward spiral for people to get into. One thing leads to another, and next thing you know, they're in a sedentary lifestyle, smoking and eating and drinking, yeah. and not doing the things that makes them happy. Stress builds up, and then boom, it all pops.
And do you marry that to the conversation around, you know, forming a new habit or forming this routine in a way needs to be the path of least resistance? Like, so scheduling it is something where it's like, hey, you don't even have to think about doing that today because boom, it's in your calendar. You're making it so accessible or convenient for them. And it's something like I have to do that for myself, even still now. Like I have to be like, okay, if my goal is this,
yes,
it can't be something that takes me 45 minutes to get through in traffic twice a week because I just know it's not sustainable. It's like, it has to be something that I can ride my bike 3 minutes down the road to, or else I need to find a different way to incorporate it into my routine.
It has to be doable, right? I mean, you know, that kind of goes with, I think, with setting any goal. You know, you set the goal and say, well, I want to be a sub 3 hour marathoner. Well, you weigh 350 pounds and that's not going to happen. I love you for that. I love that you want to have a big aspiration, but it's probably right. not going to happen. Let's be realistic in the goal. And so it's easier, I find, to have people set goals when they don't have other things pressing down on them. So even if it's just starting off with nutritional goals, like I want to, just people say, I want to eat better. Okay, that's great. You know, so how do I do that? How do I begin to eat better? Well, think about it when you're not hungry. It's like, don't go grocery shopping when you're hungry. Never go to Target, you know, without a list, because you're going to come out mm-hmm. $100 poorer and you're going to have like 4 pounds of cookies. But yep. when you start thinking about how you want to eat like tomorrow, think about it today. Create a plan. Write it out when there's no stress. And so tomorrow you have already thought through those things. You don't have to put emotion into it. Other things don't compound some of those negative possibilities. And it becomes an easier task to execute if you thought about it before or work through it ahead of time. And I think the same thing comes with exercise. And especially with, you know, as a coach training people, one of the things that I try and tell people is that we create a balance and we don't do things that are outside of the balance of your life. So don't try and, you know, say, I'm going to get fit or faster at the expense of your family. You know, okay, well, you're not going to make dinner for a week because you're out, you know, you're taking time for you. That's not sustainable. You have to think mm-hmm. about the other things in your life that have balance. And I think balance is a huge key here. And with a lot of, I would say, higher end or high pro athletes, there is a level of mind and body balance. And you have to have that. And even with any athlete, you have to address the mental aspect of that and how the mind has to be in there. The mind has to be in the game and has to have bought into what you're doing in order for you to be able to execute.
I didn't know that when I was playing. And now,
and that surprises me. It surprises me that being in a national program, that there was not some level of support, because I do know that there's a lot of that at the OTC and with the Olympic programs. But it surprises me that there wasn't more of that for you, especially at that developmental age of 18, when you know you're like you're just a sponge to be listening to.
There was a sports psychologist who came in, but again, it was something. It was like, hey, if you want to go meet with him, you can. But the heavier emphasis was on, hey, let's make sure we're power skating, which is very critical. And then also, hey, like nutrition. Nutrition was the big thing. Everyone paid attention to nutrition. Yeah. You know, when we had those charts and we had eating plans, everyone paid attention to that because maybe there was more education at that time. Nowadays, I can't speak to if they have, you know, more access to the sports psychologists or just working on the mental aspect of the game. But it's something that if I could go back 10 years in time, I would juice that lemon so hard because it's so important. And it's something too where, and I know we'll talk about like this ride coming up, people have been like, hey, are you training your body? What are you doing? I was like, you know what? I am. Yeah. I'm getting miles in, getting miles on the saddle, but I'm also really working on my mind because I know physically I'll be able to do it. It's more just like, okay, what happens on day 50 in really extreme heat? And maybe I didn't equip myself with the best nutrition today. Where's my mind going to go? Because if I can keep my mind, I can keep everything. But the moment that my mind slips, it becomes a very, very difficult endeavor.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, that the question is like, has that changed? It has. You know, with the camps that we do, for paratriathlon, with the Olympic athletes, with youth and junior high performance and pro camps, the mental training is always a piece in there. And I think sometimes the athletes see it as like, oh, we got to sit down with the doc and, you know, and go through visualization and, you know, but it's so important because there is the physicality of everything. But like you said, when things start to go south, that's when your mind has to be able to be stable. Your mind has to be in the game. And if you haven't trained the mind to have a winning attitude or a winning spirit or a winning ethos, then it will fail you. And that goes in everything. We did that when I was a police officer. That, you know, we talked about when we would go into SWAT training, that, you know, your mind had to always have this "I have to win" attitude. Like you can't lose. You are not offered, you know, you're not offered the opportunity to be in a losing situation. So you mentally had to train for that. And just like you said, when you get out 50 days and something goes south, the mind is going to be the thing that keeps you back in. It's going to bring you back in. It's like your safety net.
It's so cool that it's now, like you said, part of your curriculum and part of other curriculums, and that it's this mainstream conversation. It doesn't have to be in private. It's so public now. And that excites me because still being in this growth mindset and considering myself a student, I'm going to be able to learn, you know, from individuals like yourself, from other individuals who are talking about this. And that type of collective excites me.
It's great. And so to kind of shift modes here. So after hockey, you went into wellness and that has kind of led you into a pretty epic thing that you have coming up here, which is, you're biking across America and what is being called the Wellness Ride. Can you tell me a little bit more about the Wellness Ride?
So the Wellness Ride, I'm calling it an 85-day athletic art installation. And I'm calling it that because at the front, you know, the public facing storefront is man rides across country on bicycle. It's an admirable athletic accomplishment or athletic feat. Yep. But I want the individual then to say, why is he riding his bike across the country? And the second line is, you know what, I'm encouraging individuals to expand their definition of wellness to those buckets that we previously spoke of, but then to recognize that wellness is more accessible than one may believe. And that's something that came from testing it on myself, but also from the, you know, 16 months where I kind of took the flyer on myself and said, you know what, I'm going to leave whatever job or salary I have and I'm going to go no income because I want to try to build something on my own. You know, how can I, with limited funds, still invest in my wellness? And found those ways, you know, found the ways to eat incredible food by cooking for myself, not going out to dinner, found the ways to purchase the bicycle from the flea market, go for walks, go for runs, move to California and use public gyms, like outdoor gyms that have pull-up bars or rings because there's no membership there, and using free meditation apps or learning to prioritize my sleep. And all of these things were stuff that I say it's accessible because someone who wasn't making money could access that. And I don't want people to feel that the only way they can invest in their wellness is through maybe a more expensive means. You know what? I want people to say, okay, like I can do this. You know, I can keep myself, or I can at least go for that walk every day. Maybe they'll need something else to keep them accountable. So that's the why behind this ride. And the cool part will be, rather than just showing someone that I'm on the bike every single day, mm-hmm. I wanted to take it a step further and actually introduce some of the art skills I have with releasing original writings, with having an online photo gallery of individuals I meet across the country, and doing like fun dance numbers every Friday for like fun video, stuff like that. Like making it a really engaging content release schedule for this ride. So people are like, all right, great. You know what? I'm going to support this dude. He's riding across the country. And I'm also going to be paying attention because what he's doing is fun. And, you know, he's a 28-year-old who is writing really vulnerable, raw, and intimate things about maybe what it's like to be a 28-year-old. And I can relate to that. You know, it's, yeah. I don't write or speak about like, hey, I haven't started the billion-dollar company. You know, I don't have
not like yet.
Not yet at least. But it's like I'm still like many peers. You know, 28-year-old might look at me and be like, "Hey, what's up with you?" I'm like, "Let's see, normal job, trying to build something, still have student debt. You know, figuring out how to eat as best as I can, navigating a relationship, and you know, going on a vacation and maybe going to a wedding this summer." It's like a lot of 28-year-olds are in that same space. So it's having that bit of alliance with this. So the timing was really right for it. But with all that being said too, this is also a personal adventure. You know, and I'm extremely excited to embark on that and see where it takes me. And the other piece of it too is that we are with the presenting sponsor for this is Vistro. And they create like gourmet plant-based meals pre-made. And what we're doing is every 2 weeks, I'm going to stop in a major city. And rather than raise money, we're raising meals directly with them. So we're going to be donating meals to organizations across the country. Just like, you know, like roll into New York, into Brooklyn on, I think it's the 27th of July, and maybe have raised 200 or 300 meals by then. And they all get shipped there. We drop them off. We're like, hey, great. Like wellness for everyone, you know, have a great plant-based meal. I'm going to continue biking in California, but like, hope you guys enjoy this. And like same thing in Cleveland, St. Louis, Denver, Vegas, through to LA.
Don't forget and Canton.
Do you know Canton?
No, I'm just, so I want to make sure everybody knows the dates. So Canton's, Canton's your first stop. I don't know.
So that's my childhood home. I'm going to. And it's cool. I'm going to start at the coffee shop.
Nope, I don't.
I thought you did. Yeah. So that's going to be cool. Because a lot of like childhood friends and family are going to be able to come to that. And like this whole ride is an invitation. It's like anyone who has a bike that wants to come support themselves can join me. But it'll be cool because I think my dad will ride me out of town. A couple friends might come all the way to Providence with me on day one. And I just think it'll be a really great place to kick it off, you know, going to that train station, the coffee shop that I grew up going to now like the local newspaper that I was in when I'm like 12 years old for baseball or something. Now being able to come cover this one, it's it's just a really cool, like, back to beginnings type part. So that's why it's like the emotional part is starting from Canton and be like, okay, this is where I came from, and I'm going to Los Angeles if we want to.
That's where you're kind of
put the dramatic spin on it.
Well, and so for people to be able to RSVP and can schedule this, you go to wildbutwell.com, and some of the dates and locations are going to be July 20th. You're going to be in Canton. Yes. July 27th, Brooklyn, New York. Yep. August 10th in Cleveland, Ohio. Yep. August 24th in St. Louis, Missouri. September 14th in Denver, Colorado. Yep. October 5th in Las Vegas, Nevada. And then wrapping it up on October 12th in Los Angeles, California. So that's a great tour. You got a pretty tight schedule. Now, you're riding from each of those points to the next one, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome.
And it'll be cool because, like, I'll get to Brooklyn probably on the 26th. And we'll do the fun pop-up event on the 27th, and I'll leave on the 28th. So I do get, 36 to 48 hours off of the bike.
Perfect.
And, it's a lot of time to recover, to get massive meals in, to redo my kit, go through the bike, go through gear. So it's going to be really cool too. Like, these are all fun events. Like, Brooklyn we're doing an outdoor water balloon fight just to get, like, everyone outside and moving naturally. In Ohio, it's a yoga in the park along with this group called Scare Your Soul. We're going to do this just, like, courage challenge. In St. Louis, we're painting a mural with a non-alcoholic beer company. In Denver, we're doing this storytellers event on a Saturday evening. Vegas is a surprise at the moment. And then we're sprinting from Vegas to Los Angeles. Just trying to do more miles every day. That's and the final good. Day. Yeah. The final day in LA, I don't know if you're going to be out there for it, but it's going to be really cool. Cause we're going to do like a community roll in Santa Monica for 5 or 10 miles. Then we're going to do an adventure ride 40 miles south to Costa Mesa and just make that the final day where it's like, yep, the full day after just biking 3,600 miles. Let's just tack on another 50.
Why not? It sounds great. I'm definitely going to try and see if I can be there. That would be, I love riding bikes. That's one of my passions. So it's, you and I have a lot in common where, hockey and bikes are definitely two things that really resonate with me. And I can't imagine my life without both of them, to be honest with you. And to see that you have done so well and that you're doing so many things at just the age of 28 is so encouraging. So encouraging. So, one question is, are you going to try and see if you can't get the cup to your location when you're in St. Louis?
So
you got to know somebody, right? You got to know somebody from the team.
I do. And here's the interesting part about it. They beat the Bruins. So
bittersweet.
Yeah. I have to see how I feel about it, but no, it would be cool. That's something where, and now knowing that I have no plans to return to hockey, I would be totally open to touching the cup as well. Cause I'm not going to jinx myself.
No.
Yeah. Cause we're doing the mural at this, I guess it's this really cool downtown place called the Grove, where it's up and coming art district. So it could be a possibility. We'll see. That'll be something where I'll definitely let you know about that, because that could be cool.
Oh, you got to mesh both of them. I've got good contacts with St. Louis, and one of the guys that I coach, he's from St. Louis, and he does marketing. He used to do the marketing for the Wild, and now he does for the Minnesota Loons. He went to soccer. And then another one of my clients owns the Anheuser-Busch distributorship here, so he's got very strong ties to St. Louis as well. During the playoffs, it's like they're just like every day I get a text message that says Blake Gloria, something like that, and it's like, oh my god, can you imagine? I'm like, yeah, I get it. And, I'm a huge Boston file. Like, I love the city of Boston, and I love everything about it, and I can't describe why. I can slip into a Boston accent super easy, like thick. I've seen the town like 1,000 times, it's I got a shirt that says Wicked Smart, and like, yeah. I mean, I'm terrible for it. And my wife,
but what's the history behind that?
Nothing, absolutely nothing. My friend David went to MIT. We went out there to the wind tunnel a couple times, and my wife worked at a contract in Boston, and she lived right off the common there, right in Beacon, in Beacon mm-hmm. Hill. And her friend Teresa still lives out there. We've gone out for the marathon a couple times. I just, Growing up, Bobby Orr was always one of my biggest heroes. So I think just a lot of that stuff was just, it doesn't make sense. Like, kid from Minnesota, always been here. Why is he infatuated with it? And maybe, I don't know. It's probably a whole bunch of that, but I've just always been drawn to it for some reason. Always.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
So the one thing that before I let you go that I've got to ask you about, and this is where you and I kind of like maybe diverge pathways a little bit.
Oh,
is
boy.
Is your 1 year with no beer thing.
Yeah. So, yeah. So
I get the idea behind it, right? I get the idea behind it because we used to have the saying called, if you use the booze, you lose. And it was, you know, mm-hmm. training athletes, you know, stay away from alcohol. You're way better. But man, I love beer.
Totally. And it was something where I consider my sobriety elective sobriety.
Okay.
And I think the way just we consume alcohol is, it's like the spectrum, right? It can go from someone who doesn't drink to someone who drinks way too much. And then in between there's misuse, abuse, casual drinking, wine sipper, cocktail shots. Like, there's so many variations in ways that the consumption of alcohol manifests.
Yep.
I made the conscious decision that, you know, a night out for me, maybe I go out, like, I wasn't waking up as clean and as crisp as I wanted to. Like, on a Sunday morning, I had plans to be up at 8 a.m. and be fresh, go for a ride, go for a run, cook some meals, get some work done. And maybe I wake up at 9:15 and then I eat something. I'm like an unintentional or a lazy eater. I just started recognizing those small little patterns in my life that for me slowed me down a little bit or inhibited me from achieving my goals at the pace that I wanted them to. So I confronted everything. I was like, what am I doing? Like, where am I wasting my time? And some of it went with television. Some of it went with Netflix. Some of it went with going out. Some of it went with drinking because of the effects the next day or something. So I made the commitment to myself to, if I'm going to really go for something and I'm going to try to make all my dreams come true, I was like, I can't compromise myself. So that was something where I had to give it the boot.
Yeah. I applaud you for it, man. Don't get me wrong. Everything you said is absolutely true. I totally believe it. I would profess it. I wish I would, like, Richie, you are the 28-year-old version of me that I wish I was now. Like, if I could be reborn as 28 and say, what are all the things that I'd like to do, you know, between your, you know, your career that you had and where you're going with social awareness and wellness and your relationship with bikes and all this stuff. I got to tell you, man, you're living the life on the nines. You are just doing everything. You're doing the right stuff. You're a beacon of hope for that generation that you're in. And I really, really applaud you for that.
Thank you. And I really appreciate that.
Richie, if people want to find out more about you, get in contact with you, just like learn more about like who you are, what mm-hmm. are some of the best ways that we can connect you with them?
So I would say if it's ride specific for the wellness ride, that would be on Wild But Well and navigating to the wellness ride tab. For more just me and everything that I am very active on Instagram and Medium. I write on Medium and I share daily posts and stories through Instagram. So that handle is Ricky Tickles, RickieTicklez. And that's the same handle for Medium as well. And all my, I link all the accounts. So it's like, you can find one from the other,
gotcha.
But I also open invitation to anyone that wants to connect directly through email. My email is richardcrowleyiv@gmail.com. And that is, it truly is an invitation. It's, I love to have conversations with people who have shared values, but also if someone wants to challenge something and they say, hey, I do this, it works for me, I heard you do that, or what are your thoughts on this? Like that, right? Those conversations lead to an outcome of growth. You know, it's this growth mindset, always learning. So that truly is an open invitation. I have all the time in the world for anyone who wants to have those. I love it.
Awesome. Well, Richie, I like I said, it's been my pleasure spending the last 35 minutes with you and learning more about you. And just I'm a fan. I am going to be following you, and hopefully I get to see you at one of the stops here on the Wellness Ride. And if for some reason I don't, best of luck to you, my friend. You are an incredible young man, and only good things are going to come to you. I can see that.
Thank you. I appreciate those words. And you left the door open there. I'm going to be hounding you with invites to see if there's a time we can hit the pavement together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'll be the guy with the burly and the little 4-year-old daughter behind him going faster, faster.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, I can't thank you enough for the time. Thank you for spending the last couple of minutes with us. And once again, spend some time here on the Be Better podcast. We thank you for all that you do. And if you like what you hear, make sure you follow us and subscribe in iTunes. The link is at the very bottom. And until next time, be on your bike, play some hockey, stay away from the booze, and just be a little better. Thanks. Bye.